Rabbi J. Michelson is an activist, an author, an attorney, and a meditation teacher. That's why it got my attention when his latest article in the Forward was headlined, "They Went Low, We Should Go Lower." Thankfully, Jay agreed to be with us once again on State of Belief Radio, and so I am happy to welcome him once again to our show. Jay, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you, Welton. Pleasure to be here, as always.
So, I don't mean to blow this out of proportion, but your call to action does suggest you're not about to take a wait-and-see attitude about the president-elect.
No, absolutely not. I mean, you know, I suppose I have the luxury to do so as a, you know, relatively well-off, you know, white male citizen of the United States. But it's certainly the case that many people, including the most vulnerable, don't have that luxury to wait and see. And anyway, we've waited and seen. We've seen what the cabinet looks like. We've seen, an outrageous, hard far-right coalition of folks take these positions of power. So I think those of us who are motivated by the spiritual call to pursue justice need to do some pursuing.
Jay, what concerns you the most?
It's hard to know where to begin. I mean, I think, in terms of the most concerning part, it's that we have someone with such a hair trigger and erratic nature, not just with his finger on the nuclear button, but just with a hundred smaller things. You know, already the guy hasn't been sworn in yet, and we've already got a crisis in our relationships with China and also with Pakistan and around the world and the conflicts of interest. But I think as the cabinet is taking shape, we really do need to realize that this is a more significant presidency even than Reagan. I think it will be the most transformative since FDR in terms of dismantling civil rights laws, dismantling voting rights laws, bringing back national stop and frisk and the militarization of police, increasing mass incarceration, increasing the wealth gap, deporting 3 million people, many of whom have been here for almost their entire lives, and the enormous uptick we've already seen in hate crimes due to the president-elect's rhetoric against Muslims and his followers' rhetoric against Jews and others.
Jay, how do we get around that age-old trap? I just keep going back to they went low, we need to go lower. How do we avoid becoming like our opponent?
So there actually was a sequel to that article, which used the metaphor of the Sabra, which is, before it was a...
I read it, yes.
Right, it's like, it's a cactus in Israel, and it's a term used for native-born Israelis who are very tough on the outside and spiny on the outside, but very tender inside. And I think, that does require a certain kind of what I would call spiritual discipline, to really remember at the dawn of every day why we're doing what we're doing. And for me, that evokes love and compassion, not hatred. You know, if I'm honest with myself and I do practice a bunch of meditation, and so I try to see what's really going on. If I'm honest, I see that there is a lot of ill will and dislike in my heart towards some of these people who are trying to take away my rights and the rights of others and destroy the planet as we know it. And so it is as easy to get caught up into that. And so personally, my practice is just to turn my attention to the vulnerable people who are really in danger. And then what I find inside is a lot of concern and care and not that same kind of bitter anger and animosity. Mm-hmm. And, I get hate tweets and hate email every single day. So if I want to fall into the gutter, there are certainly plenty of opportunities to do that. But I just think that distinction between our outward-facing self and our inner life, actually, I think is a really important one.
Jay, you cite examples of the numerous battles won by the political right. Where in recent history do we see progressive achievements that came about through sheer strength, not coalition building and compromise?
Well, I think I think it's a mixed bag. I think there's always going to be some coalition compromise. So if you look at the Civil Rights Act, right? So this isn't something that LBJ necessarily thought he would ever do in a million years. But but did it and then pushed it through Congress. And you look at the Voting Rights Act, kind of similar stories. You know, but also that kind of coalition and compromise effort would never have happened without the more confrontational tactics of Dr. King and others. You know, it's easy to say, oh, nonviolence, but it was also confrontational to put one's body on the line, to resist, to have what he had, which was an intersectional approach to justice, to say, you know, we can't look at race without looking at poverty, we can't look at poverty without looking at the war. And that was not, you know, it may have been nonviolent, and it may have been religious, and it may have been with love in the heart, but it was not about let's see if we can work with white supremacists in some way so that we can find common ground.
Mm-hmm. What do you say to your colleagues and other progressive thinkers about what we need to do next? What's the kind of action that we need to take right away?
Well, I think, you know, I think it does break down into outward facing and inward facing. And I do spend a lot of time thinking about the inward part as well. You know, we should remember that this is a government by the minority. You know, the president lost by almost 3 million votes. The Senate went Democratic in terms of popular vote. So this is an anti-democratic moment where a minority party is controlling two and soon to be three, all three branches of government. And we should take heart in that as well as take courage. That, you know, even among Trump supporters, right, there were very distinct groups. There were religious conservatives who didn't buy into all of what he had to say on race and other issues, but, you know, had their eye on social issues, the Supreme Court. There were the deplorables, the people who really liked the racist parts. And then there were a lot of folks who wanted a change and wanted someone from the outside and wanted somebody who was a maverick and recognized that he was imperfect, but voted for him anyway. And I think just remembering that this is not actually Trump's country, that it's only about 20 to 25% of the country that agrees with what's going on right now in the cabinet and what's been in that platform, that can help us internally to just really think about what we need to be doing. And, you know, fortunately, the right had 8 years of resistance to the Obama administration to teach us how to do it. Mm-hmm. Now it's our turn. So whether it's obstruction in the Senate or whether it's state actions to shield undocumented people from deportation and to resist the militarization of the police force, you know, I think getting involved in our local and state politics is now not just sort of a nice thing to do, but absolutely essential. And that's true wherever we live in the country. So, you know, a lot of folks live in blue cities in the middle of red states, and that's a really important place to get involved to ensure, you know, there's no such thing as a red state, right? There are different parts of every state. And I think what we need to be doing is thinking really pragmatically and really hard-nosed. I'm not a huge fan of some of what I would call the gestural politics of, you know, let's have a protest to make ourselves feel better. I think the time has passed for that. I think it's roll up our sleeves, get to work time, and most of the action is now going to happen on the state and local level in terms of effective resistance to the Trump administration.
In the other article in the foreword that you mentioned, you make an observation that I think is just terribly important, saying that we need to become tough on the outside and tender on the inside. I think when you've just described some of the actions that we need to take, you've given us a challenge on how to involve ourselves in those actions and do what you suggested of being tough on the outside, tender on the inside. So I'd like for you to talk just a little bit more about that, because I think it's so important.
Well, so, you know, when we're in a, you know, I hate to use the word safe space because it's been so demonized, but I'm going to use it. You know, when we're in a safe space to actually open our hearts and look inside, I think we'll see a lot of grief and a lot of fear. And if we're honest with ourselves, you know, I said in that article we're cycling through the stages of grief, but it's different because we're going to keep getting re-injured over and over again over these next several years. So, you know, I think we do need to turn inward to our, not just inside ourselves, but inside our communities to support one another. And to do the things that we need for communal self-care, coming together as communities in our faith traditions and in our contemplative traditions. and not do that in public. Mm-hmm. I'm not interested in sharing my heart with the Twitter haters and the Trump supporters who email me every day. They don't get that part of me. They don't get to be let inside to do damage to my psyche and laugh at me and do all the things they want to do.
Yeah.
What they get is a different face. So if there's a possibility for dialogue and for empathy and for compromise and for conversation, of course. But when it's coming down to policies, when the incoming EPA director just circulated a list of names of EPA employees and government employees who attended any UN session on climate change so that he can fire all of them, and a list of any staff members who were involved in calculating the social cost of carbon so he can fire them. You know, when we're talking about brass tacks and people's lives and planetary sustainability on the line, that's where that tough exterior comes into play. And I didn't see a whole lot of calls for conservatives to understand liberals better after Obama won. I saw a lot of rolling up sleeves on the right and a lot of fight.
Right.
And unfortunately, that's what's required now.
Jay, I mean, you just mentioning those lists gets me right back in touch with my anger, and I'm sure with other people's anger. And we need to know how to deal with that anger so that we don't let it just breed itself over and over and cripple us from doing what we need to be doing.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And that's why I think both sides of that, the inward-facing and the outward-facing, are absolutely essential. You know, we have to be careful, I think, because among progressives of faith, you know, there's a real imperative to do things like opening the heart and like being open to dialogue and things like that. And when we do that in some context, we're going to get really hurt. And so I think that bifurcation, you know, we talk about integration a lot, but sometimes having boundaries and bifurcation is important also. And I think, you know, we come together and we should have space with one another to really open up and to work through this together and see where we can support each other who are falling into despair and into anger. You know, I have a friend who works for the Trevor Project, which feels basically as a suicide hotline for LGBT youth. And, you know, the calls have skyrocketed. The number of interventions that they've had to do, which means when they have to call the police to stop something from happening, has skyrocketed since the election. This isn't just about, you know, delicate liberals feeling sad, right? This is about people considering ending their lives and being really consumed with anger and with despair. And so just as we're busy fighting on the outside, we also need to really tend to the most vulnerable and the least of these on the inside.
Jay, over the past year, we've had some long, intensive conversations about the Supreme Court. While you're on with us, I have to ask you, do you have any thoughts on what might be coming next in terms of the Supreme Court? You're a member of the bar there.
Sure. So, you know, I think we'll see the nomination of someone like William Pryor, who's seemingly the leading candidate to replace Justice Scalia, who's a bit to the right of Justice Scalia. Essentially, that would just be a reset, so that basically we'd be back to where we were before Scalia passed away, with the same splits that we had at that time. You know, the real crisis comes with the next justice, especially if it's one of the more progressive justices who either steps down, passes away, and so forth. And that's where the balance really shifts. I think there's not a lot of interest on the Democrat side right now in going along with any of these nominations. You know, we've just seen something absolutely unprecedented. A bunch of people putting their hands on a Bible and swearing to uphold an oath of office and then breaking that oath of office by not fulfilling their constitutional role. That doesn't mean saying yes. That means saying yes or no, and they chose not to do either. So, you know, now the shoe is on the other foot, and I don't think there's a big appetite among Democrats to push any of these through. I did do a think piece for the Daily Beast that, you know, we might think not for the Supreme Court, but for some of the lower courts where there are over 50 vacancies that President Obama has nominated people and they've just languished for a year, 2 years, or more, that maybe that's appropriate for recess appointments. But I think the real battle on the Supreme Court is more like, you know, is the next justice, so sometime in the near future.
Dr. Jay Michelson wears at least two hats. He is a rabbi, meditation teacher, and leading writer on contemporary spirituality, whose latest book is The Gate of Tears, Sadness, and the Spiritual Path. Jay is also a widely read columnist a longtime LGBT activist and an attorney. Jay brings a unique expertise to our show every time he's with us. Jay, I'm sure in the days ahead, we're going to need to touch base with you fairly regularly, because even though we've got the energy and the passion to do it, we're going to have to encourage each other.
Absolutely. And, you know, to folks who are listening, this is one of those venues and those channels that's now so important. So it's really important that we support both independent media, progressive media, and voices of faith in what's in a coming dark time. So I hope folks will really consider doing that.